You don't have to be Einstein to know we're in the midst of a recycling crisis. Since China, Indonesia and India stopped taking our waste, state and local governments have been struggling to divert our plastic, glass, paper and cardboard from either entering landfill or being stockpiled in the hope that an answer can be found.
The message here, and I know this is a hard one for residents, ratepayers, businesses to hear, is that we want you to keep recycling because we've got to have that product ready to go to ensure that those markets can be opened up, when we find those solutions. And what we know about the waste and recycling industry is it's moving very quickly at the moment, and there are those solutions there. So it might be a hard thing to say, but this crisis is really presenting us with a huge opportunity to reimagine that domestic recycling industry.
That's Melbourne's Deputy Lord Mayor Aaron Wood speaking on News 24 after that state's major recycler, I'm talking about Victoria, closed due to EPA penalties and then insolvency. In the meantime, around the country, our own sense of purpose and splitting up our waste starts to fall away. I mean, what's the point, we may be asking ourselves? We're trying to do the right thing for our future and the system is failing us. So, over to you now. At a national level, what needs to be put in place to bring our recycling policies up to speed? If you had the reins of power over how we behave as consumers, big and small business, levels of government, what would you put in place? You can email us right now, lifematters@abc.net.au. Trevor Thornton is a lecturer in hazardous materials management at Deakin University. Trevor's also worked with Victoria's Environment Protection Authority. And welcome to the show, Trevor.
Good morning. Thank you.
Trevor, we know Victoria is slowly drowning in stockpiled waste, along with hundreds of tonnes going into landfill. That's that state. What's the size of the problem on a national scale?
On a national scale, probably the other states don't have the same issues as Victoria. We've had a major recycler close down for a variety of reasons. The other states are still able to sort of process, but more and more we're generating more and more, and so therefore at a point of time in not the distant future, they'll probably start having some problems in terms of stockpiling and end up sending recyclables to landfill.
So Victoria's issue is a wake-up call for the country.
Oh, absolutely, and we did know about this many years ago.
When you say that, is that because China gave us fair warning that they weren't going to take all our waste ad infinitum?
Yeah, so basically at the beginning of last year, that's when the crunch came, when they said no more, unless it's a very low level of contamination. But they sort of signalled it a couple of years beforehand. So unfortunately, we kept our head in the sand and didn't do anything about it, thinking the problem would just go away.
And then on top of that came Indonesia announcing they're going to turn back the ships full of our waste, and the same thing's happened with India. What is it about our waste that makes these countries we've relied on say no?
What's happened, they've become a little bit more aware of what's going into them. So when a container load of, say, paper or cardboard arrives there, it's got a range of contaminants in it. And while they've needed that product, they've sort of accepted it. But it's like you go and buy a pizza or something like that. You don't want bits and pieces that you didn't ask for on it. So they've been getting a lot of basically rubbish. And so they've had to clean it up and so spend that time and effort and resources and dispose of it to landfill. Now they're sort of saying, hang on a second, we're buying sort of what should be clean paper and cardboard. We don't want it anymore.
So if it had been clean, do you suspect we could still have this ongoing relationship with these other countries?
Absolutely. I mean, China has indicated that if the level of contamination was 0.05%, which is really hard to achieve, that they would accept it. So they've set some sort of rules, the parameters. We either meet them or we don't.
Nevertheless, even if we didn't have those countries, and we now don't, but even if we hadn't had those countries, what is it about the way we approach recycling our own waste that means it hasn't been really a viable business model at home?
Yeah, and it goes back to this level of contamination again, is that the Australian businesses, if they buy some paper, cardboard or plastic and they're going to use the raw materials, then they're fearful that they're going to have to clean it up or it's going to affect their product quality, so they choose to buy virgin materials and use that. But if they started buying it and started demanding it, it's a sort of like an egg and a chicken type thing.
Well, that's the circular economy, which is
absolutely
what so many parts of our lifestyle need to get to if we're going to believe, the IPC latest report, which came out yesterday, on land use and air quality.
Exactly. And some of the European countries and other countries have adopted the circular economy principles many years ago, we're just beginning to talk about it. So we're really a bit behind the eight ball here.
Give us some of the examples of countries we could be modelling on when it comes to the ways we handle our waste.
Oh, certainly, the Scandinavian countries are doing a lot of great things. They've been separating their material cleanly, the recyclables, for many, many years. Even Japan.
South Korea.
All those sorts of countries are doing the right thing. They've had the problem of perhaps limited landfill space, so there's been that impetus to do something. We've seemed to have a lot of space, and so there hasn't been that impetus, so we've just business as usual.
That's really interesting, isn't it? So I take it those countries with best practice have managed to educate us as consumers and also the vast amounts of waste that's being, you know, outputted by industry to do the right thing in terms of sorting, so it's not going to be a contamination issue and therefore the business model works.
Exactly. And if you speak to people who, say, have come to Australia from, say, Denmark or Sweden or something like that, they're astonished about what we do here because, again, it was
normal. Or don't do, as a
or don't do, yeah, I think, yeah. More to the point.
Yeah.
And they sort of say, you know, we can put everything into this one bin, you know, all the recyclables, whereas back home we had to sort it into the paper and cardboard or plastics and glass and so forth, and we would not under any circumstances put the wrong thing into the bin. And it was normal, natural for us. Education at schools, education of the community, all these sorts of things happen. We don't.
All right. Well, let's get down into the nitty-gritty a bit about what it is as consumers and also at a policy level we're doing wrong here. I have a yellow bin and I put my cardboard, I put my bottles in it, my glass bottles, I put in my plastic containers where appropriate. What's wrong with that when it gets to the recycler?
So what happens is the infrastructure. So what happens, it gets to the recycler and basically goes along a long conveyor belt and there may be machinery and there's hand sorting and a whole range of different things. If I use the example, say, plastic bags, you know, the plastic shopping bags, when they go through the system, they actually act like paper. So they end up going into the paper stream and contaminating the paper. So what we've got to look at is better infrastructure so that we can sort better. And the technology exists. It's not like we have to invent it or anything like that. So if we had that, then it's part of the problem, the contamination wouldn't be there.
We're talking here about how we can improve the way we don't do recycling well at the moment, and we'd love to hear from you as well. If you have an idea on a national scale, not just on a household scale, because so many of us want to do the right thing and are at the household scale, but clearly this is a national issue that we need to address in some consistent way. What would you do if you had the reins of power? How would you change the way we go about recycling our waste? We'd love to hear from you. You can email us right now. lifematters@abc.net.au. My guest is Trevor Thornton, lecturer in hazardous materials management at Deakin University, previously from the EPA. Also with us is the Chief Executive Officer of the Australian Packaging Covenant Organisation. It's a not-for-profit group across business and governments working to meet environmental obligations for sustainable packaging. And my guest is Brooke Donnelly. Brooke, let's talk about the business and industry side of this equation. Mm-hmm. Does business manufacturing really need to fundamentally change in the way it deals with not only its output, but also its inputs in terms of recycled material?
Absolutely. You made a good point before. This isn't about a single issue or a small problem that we need to tweak around the edges of. This is actually a systemic transformation of the way in which we manage the packaging ecosystem in our country. And, you know, Trevor's made some really good points about the way the system operates currently, and it has done for a great deal of time now. And really why this piece of work is so big and so challenging is because we aren't talking about just tweaking around the edges. We are talking about taking a great big ship and turning it because we actually need to transform how we actually deal with packaging and see packaging, as you mentioned earlier on, within the context of the circular economy. So not that packaging is a waste product, but it's actually a resource. And that means really pulling those levers that you were also both speaking about in terms of the end markets and creating and ensuring that businesses are taking responsibility for the products that they're putting into the marketplace, and then that we're finding a home for those when they're no longer used for their functional purpose. And that's what that circular economy approach is all about, the continual loop of the materials going around and around.
There's so many weak links in this chain, but yeah. I'd like to look at the one that I think you've just alluded to, Brooke, and that is, and I think Trevor mentioned this too, industry is still reluctant to use recycled materials because they're worried about contamination. But then again, if there was more demand, maybe the standards of contamination would go or would rise and there'd be less in there. Are you finding that industries across a range of sectors are still really reluctant to go first to recycling?
Not necessarily. I think there's been an incredibly huge shift in the last 18 months, especially. In April in 2018, all the governments came out and endorsed a national packaging target, which was that 100% of all packaging will be reusable, recyclable or compostable by 2025.
Now, is that target enforceable?
Yes, it's enforceable in the sense that everybody's behind it. We've got each and every state and territory government involved in this work, the federal government. Then we've got over 1,500 organisations that are currently working on achieving these targets through the work of the Australian Packaging Covenant. Those 1,500 organisations represent over $360 billion of annual revenue in the Australian marketplace. So they are very large, very complex organisations, and also small organisations, right from businesses that have a revenue of $5 million right up to $15 billion. So right across the entire supply chain, and over 153 different industry sectors are involved in this group working towards as signatories to what's called the Australian Packaging Covenant, and they've made a commitment to achieving these targets.
All right, well, that sounds encouraging. What does it mean on the ground, though, in terms of inputs to those industries and then outputs to us in terms of packaging for the products we buy?
I think a really great example of how it addresses both consumer and the industry as well. If you look at it from an industry perspective, there's a lot of work being done around what we were just talking about, the context of recycled content. And you can look recently at Coca-Cola. They've just introduced 100% recycled content into all of their bottles below a 600 mil size. That actually means that that's 10,000 tonnes of virgin material that is not going to be used in Australian communities each and every year going forward from here. So it's really significant when you look at something like that. And then if you look at the consumer perspective, one of the most powerful things that's happened in the last 18 months has been the introduction of the Australian packaging recycling label. And that's actually a labelling program that has been developed between industry and government to provide consumers with information about what of those materials should be going into your recycling bin versus what goes into your red bin. And this is actually really powerful when you talk or trying to address the issue that Trevor mentioned around contamination, because the earliest intervention point you can have is when a consumer is actually putting that that packaging material into a bin and making sure it's going in the right bin. So you're maximising the amount of recyclable materials that are being captured, but you're not contaminating them with materials that can't be recycled at this stage. And a consumer understands that. And we run a consumer education program with Planet Ark to ensure that consumers understand what to do. But the really powerful industry part of this labelling program is to be able to use that labelling, to put that label on your packaging or on your product, you actually need to complete something that's called the PREP tool. Now, the PREP tool is a packaging recyclability evaluation portal, which is a long name.
Yes, but it is.
What it essentially does is when you design a new packaging format, you enter into the portal all the information, so the size of the material, the type of material, its dimensions, and it actually pops back to you and it says, look, here's a bottle and that part's recyclable, this part isn't recyclable and it's not recyclable because of that. And it then tells you what kind of materials and why it's not recyclable. And that then actually drives industry to design recyclable products from the get-go. And that's actually really powerful in terms of driving better materials in the stream itself.
Trevor, Brooke's describing what seems to be a real willingness to change the way business deals with its own packaging, either coming in or going out. And that's very encouraging into the future. But of course, we're facing a crisis right now. Victoria, at the moment, as I understand it, is the only state still not with container deposit legislation in place. There's a lot of, in the last couple of days, there's been a lot of talk about how it could only be rolled out for something like $9 million, according to the state branch of the Greens, and it would actually generate revenue, they proclaim, of about $250 million. It seems like a no-brainer. What would it mean to have container deposit legislation in place in a place like Victoria when it comes to contamination?
Yeah, basically what it would end up doing, apart from the litter side of things of getting it out, it actually reduces the level of contamination.
So why is that?
Well, for example, if you put your glass into your recycling bin at home, which is okay.
Well, we're encouraged to.
Exactly. But what happens when it's sort of travelling along, gets into the truck and gets dropped on the floor at the recycling facility, it can all break up into small pieces. Again, that's not a huge problem. But then some of that glass will get into the plastics and the paper and the cardboard. And so that causes the issue of contamination then. The container deposit schemes pull out a lot of that glass. It's still going to be recycled, but in fact, it's a cleaner stream. And so what happens, you've got from the container deposit machines or however you do it, you've got, in a sense, pure glass or pure plastic or pure aluminium, and they're not contaminated. So in fact, it will encourage more businesses, like Brooke was talking about, to adopt and use recyclables. It is a no-brainer. It everybody wants it. Everybody is doing it, except for Victoria.
It's interesting too, isn't it? Because as the current waste crisis continues to build in a state like Victoria, I've read news reports that there are Victorians crossing into the New South Wales border with their glass to avail themselves of the container deposit schemes and depots in that state and reaping the rewards, much to the chagrin and disapproval of some New South Wales businesses.
Exactly. And there is a push for a national scheme. Whether we go down a national or whatever, I don't think that really matters as long as we have a scheme. And so, again, why Victoria doesn't join this or do something? But the government seems to say, well, we're not even going to discuss it, we're not even going to talk about it, and there's no real reason as to why. If they don't want to, come out and say why they don't want to, rather than just saying we're not going to discuss it.
Well, watch this space. In the meantime, the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has flagged that he will be putting plastic recycling and what he describes as our appalling rates of plastic recycling on the table at today's COAG meeting, the first one since the election being held in Cairns. And I was reading again in news reports that depending on what council area you happen to be in, some councils can recycle up to 10 different versions of plastic, while others are only doing 5, 6 or 7. And that's going to send very confusing messages to consumers like me.
Yeah. And one of the things that councils have also been talking about is introducing a fourth bin into the household.
Right. Which I think is adopted in South Korea too.
Yeah. And so whether that'll be just for glass or whether it'll be for other materials or whatever, but we've got to make sure that we, like Brooke was saying, we need to sort of take a deep breath. We need to sort of think of these things a little bit more carefully rather than just these knee-jerk reactions, which have in a sense got to us where we are today. So we've got to think carefully. We've got to involve all the stakeholders. We've got to have the waste companies, the recycling companies, the organisations such as APCO all around the table to discuss the issue so we come up with the right solution.
Brooke Donnelly, can I just come back to you on this as well? One thing that strikes me is one of the other sort of bottlenecks, and I'd use that word advisedly, in this whole link process and the aspirations for a circular economy, is that there are varying standards of technology in different states and territories when it comes to the recycling companies themselves. And I would imagine that for industry bodies like yourself, representing some of the needs and aspirations of business companies, wide, large multinationals as well, that they want certainty of product that comes out of these. And if there are different outputs from different kinds of machinery, that only increases uncertainty, doesn't it?
It does, but I think there's a lot of great work that's being done right now. APCO this year is running 24 different projects to look at the evidence base for the roadmap towards these 2025 targets going forward. And part of that is understanding what the current infrastructure is, what are the gaps, how much capacity do we have, and trying to understand that national landscape. But that's also happening in coordination with other agencies and organisations organisations who are doing work. So if you look at the Australian Council of Recyclers, if you look at the Waste Management Resource Recovery, WEMRA and ENDRIC, they're all looking at ways in which to accredit and certify and understand the capacity and of various recycling organisations. So they're looking at that national view as well and saying, okay, well, what is it that we can do and where, you know, what levels and what standards are they at? So there's lots of bits of work that are going on. There's also a lot of work going on at the state level and territory level in governments, understanding what their in their own geographical capacity is. You do have an industry that is having to take a step back and actually understand what their role is going to be going forward. Because as I mentioned earlier, you're talking about a systemic transformation.
Sure.
And that actually requires you to think through what you're going to do as well. So the
it begs the question, where's our national consistency, isn't it? Isn't that what we're talking about here as part of that conversation?
Well, it's always a challenge in a federated country, and we do live in one. but you know, yes, getting some type of harmonisation and a consistent approach, and the CDS is a great example of that. You know, if we had a national approach, that would probably have been delivered a lot more effectively. But still, these are where we've really got to get consistent thresholds, so that you've got these national supply chains,
yeah.
And you need to be doing the same thing in WA that you're doing in the ACT.
We've got to wrap this up, guys. So I want to get a bit of some crystal balling going here, and hopefully not in the too distant future when I say crystal ball. So, Brooke, from your perspective, what do we need to have happen in terms of, okay, let's start with base loads here. How much of our industrial waste or waste from your members are we recycling now, and what could it be if we got our act together?
Well, the intent is that all packaging, everything that is here.
That might be the intent, but what's the reality?
Well, the reality varies, but you're probably talking, if you're talking across all materials, plastic, paper, metal and glass, you're probably around the 45-50%.
And at the moment we're what, 30%?
No, we're at 45.
Oh, we're at 45. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Where could we reach? Could we actually reach 100%? Are you seriously saying that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, it's going to be a series of solutions. It won't just be about recyclability. It'll be about reuse, and people really need to open their mind to what the concept of reuse is,
right.
And also compostable. But those three things combined, we have every intention that we will get there, and we've got a firm plan, strategy and roadmap towards getting to there.
Trevor, if Australia was working properly in terms of its recycling landscape, what would it look like?
It would look fantastic. But I think also we've got to look at avoidance and reduction in the first instance. Recycling's great.
Yes.
But there's many, many opportunities to try and reduce the amount of waste we actually generate. We're good at recycling, but we're also good at wasting. But I think that if we can adopt a lot more in terms of reduction and reuse, we can clean up this contamination level, then we're going to reduce what's going to landfill and the need for a whole lot of other infrastructure and so forth considerably. But I'm thinking, as you said at the beginning, it's an opportunity. Let's be positive.
Trevor Thornton, Brooke Donnelly, thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you.